Welcome to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and as usual, I'm joined by Seth Wintrom. How are you this week, Seth?
I'm good.
All right, great. We have a bunch of stuff to talk about this week, and we're going to start with Tesla as usual. We're going to talk about the $35,000 Model 3 and the little scare that Tesla gave us this week, or at least gave some fans and reservation holders. A great efficiency test that put a lot of competing EVs in perspective this week, and a bunch of other stuff, but we have a sponsor this week, so let's start with that. Give it back to you, Seth.
Yeah, so this week, Dandelion Energy is sponsoring us, and they're a great company, and we've known about Dandelion for quite a bit of time. Dandelion Energy is the leading home geothermal company, and they're doing almost all of their work right now in New York State. Homeowners who make the switch to geothermal heating save, on average, over $2,200 per year, which is, boom, that's a lot of money. Visit dandelionenergy.com/electric to see if your home qualifies. So it's a solution to your, you know, most people in New York State are using oil, heating oil, and that's incredibly inefficient. Obviously, it's a fossil fuel. But did you know that just 5 feet below the surface of your home, the temperature of the earth is warm enough to provide you with heating in the winter? Today's sponsor, Dandelion Energy, uses cutting-edge geothermal technology to harness the Earth's warm temperature to safely and reliably heat your home without relying on expensive, outdated, and dangerous heating fuels. And they are doing it with a cost-effective system that's actually saving homeowners thousands of per year on average. How many people currently heat their homes with fuel oil and propane? Over 7 million households in the Northeast. So that's New York and the surrounding area. So you might be wondering, how come geothermal wasn't viable before? And, you know, there are a few people running around with geothermal right now. The answer is that in the past, systems have been too expensive and used out-of-date technology, meaning they weren't cost competitive with the fossil fuel heating. So Dandelion Energy, it's the kind of company we love, physics first principles. They finally make residential home geothermal cost competitive with a system eligible for ITC tax credit and other local tax credits. So, you know, I unfortunately heat my home with fuel oil. When we moved into the home, we put in a wood burning stove, and we probably do about half of our winter heating with that now. But you know, and wood is a fossil fuel, sort of, even though, you know, we get the trees out of our backyard, which fall naturally, and the carbon's going into the atmosphere one way or the other. So we burn fuel for about half of our heating, but the other half is oil. We had Dandelion come out. Right now, Dandelion is only doing forced air, and we have radiator heat, so we're not yet on Dandelion's list, but they gave me their spiel, and I'm so on board with this idea. Basically, they found out, and they're a Google X company. They came out of Google X. They found out ways to drill more efficiently into the ground. We have really rocky soil, so they didn't care about that. We had somebody come out a couple years ago, and they were like, yeah, we can't do it, it's too rocky. Dandelion can. They go down, they dig, 5 feet down, and they put these pipes that are, exchange heat, and they put a forced air thing in your, wherever your heater is currently, and or your boiler. And they save you a ton of money, and you don't burn oil, which is like, it's a win-win. So anyway, Dandelion's our sponsor this week, and hopefully some weeks ahead, we're really proud to have them on board. Dandelionenergy.com/electric.
Awesome. Works a lot with what we're covering this week, as usual, which is about efficiency, both in your cars and in your home. All right, Tesla Model 3 $35,000 standard battery pack. Tesla has been posting on their website a timeline for it for the past 2 years now, really. And at first, it was supposed to come like early or mid 2018 or something. Now we are 2019 and still not there yet. They've been updating that timeline infrequently. It has mostly been like 4 to 6 months, but like it wasn't updated very often. And they have completely removed that mention from the Model 3 online configurator in the US, at least. Somehow it's still on the Canadian one, or I don't know about the other markets, but That's weird. And of course, when that happened, a bunch of you guys sent us a ton of emails like, hey, what's going on here? Like, yeah, fear that Tesla might be trying to walk away from that system. And I mean, that fear is partly justified because if we go back, like especially like 2 weeks ago or something, Elon tweeted something like, oh, the mid-range $40,000 Model 3 is basically a $35,000 version after accounting for incentive and gas savings. So a bunch of people saw that and like, oh, is he trying to get out of producing an actual $35,000 version?
And it kind of felt like he was kind of, you know, preparing people for that eventuality.
But then right after he said, no, it's still coming, but it's difficult, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, it felt reminiscent of back when they introduced the Model S, and the Model S was supposed to start at $50,000. And it did start at $50,000 with the Model S 40 kilowatt hour version, but they killed that version like right away. And so we don't want to see the same thing happening with the Model 3. And we reached out at Tesla to ask, why did you remove any mention of the standard battery pack in your on your website, in the US version at least? And the company refused to comment on it. So, I mean, the explanation would have been nice. Still, I don't think it's not going to happen just because of that. I don't think that's realistic. If we go back to the last earning calls, Elon was quite clear that they were working towards that, and he said mid year probably makes the most sense. So like a 4 to 6 months timeline would have still been accurate, I think, based on that. So I don't know why they removed that. It's really weird.
Yeah, it is weird. Well, like, are they testing, you know, like people's reactions to things?
Let's see how much people freak out. If they freak out too much, we're not going to do it.
it did feel kind of like we were being tested.
Yeah. But I mean, my point of view is like, look at the mid-range Model 3, which I think, and I know you agree with that because you had a great post about it a few months back. It is great value at $43,000, it's $42,900 or something. It has great value, but then if you look at what it takes to bring that down to $35,000, I mean, they must be pretty close because that version of the car has a bigger battery pack, so Tesla are going to have fewer cells in the standard version, so we're going to save some money there. I don't know how much, but still, it should be significant. Maybe a few thousand dollars less in cost right there. And then you have the standard interior too that the base Model 3 is supposed to come to. So that might not be as significant, but I think they must be pretty damn close to that $35,000 base price. And you have to account that they are still making money on that $43,000 Model 3 too. So probably they can, maybe they are likely aiming to have a slightly smaller margin on that $35,000 version before option. So that's something to take account also. And then once that is released, yeah, and that's probably the major factor why it's not happening yet, is the fact that they are taking into account economies of scales too. So as the production increase, then they're going to be able to get some economies of scales and offer the less expensive version. And that production ramp hasn't happened really yet. Tesla has been stuck at 4,000 to 5,000 units for a while now.
And, you know, Elon mentioned that the $35,000 one would have a entirely different battery pack.
Battery module, yeah.
Module. Like, so there is some design work that needs to be done, and I don't know if that's holding anything back.
Yeah.
But you know, like theoretically, at that, you know, if they could build a 220 mile one for 37.5, for instance, now today, I wonder if they would do that with the new pack.
So just the new pack, and then the new interior, you're saying, or something like that? Like you just,
yeah, if they just made, if the only thing keeping the $35,000 one from being released at $35,000 was the cost of the battery cells coming down, you know, an additional 5 or 10%. I wonder if Elon and company would release the exact $35,000 car, but for a little bit more, and then, you know, reduce the price by $100 every, you know, or $500 every couple weeks or months. until they get to 35,000.
I mean, that creates a problem for like, okay, when do you buy then if that's the case? But the only reason why I would be on board with that is in the US and other places where you have the incentive going away, then maybe it makes sense because, all right, even though you know that if you could wait a little bit, the car would be less expensive, you secure your chance of getting a federal incentive on it. So
yeah, I mean, if you get the car in June, it costs $2,000 less than if you get into July. So if they're at 37,000 in June, they should make the car and sell it at 37,000 because it's the same car, same price.
Yeah, if they can,
right?
I'd be on board with that as long as Tesla is being honest about it, is being clear about it. But then where it gets weird for Tesla is because they have that like same price policy in every market, and then that screws with everything too. So. If they are being very transparent about it, which is not usual for Tesla, unfortunately, then it would make that's a good idea. It would make a lot of sense, I think. But there's also the aspect of, do they need more diamond for the Model 3? Do they need to reduce the price for more diamond to create diamond? And
yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's plenty of demand in Europe and China right now.
Yeah, there are diamond in Europe and China, so the US is not that significant for them. And they have also an ace in the. They still have one card close to their chest, which is the Model 3 leasing. That's going to be a big boost to them. And
good transition.
Thank you. And this week we posted a report about Tesla preparing for the Model 3 leasing. And let's put the report into context and how we got it and everything. We got access to an email that Tesla sent to some employees this week, and. The email was kind of cryptic a little bit. It looks like it might not have been an email that should have went out to employees or something. But in the email, it was about the timeline to leasing the Model 3, to launching a leasing program for the Model 3. And it was talking about as soon as, I think next week, February 26th, people could order a Model 3 with a lease financing option. And get it, it will start delivering it like a few weeks later or something, as soon as next month, basically. But then, so we reach out to Tesla about that email, say, hey, what's up? You guys are launching the program and everything. We have solid sources that says that you do based on that email. And Tesla was like, no, we did send out that email, but the dates are not right. The dates are only, they are placeholder dates or something, which I didn't get exactly because why would they send that? the old document made basically no sense aside from the dates. Like if the dates don't matter, then the document doesn't matter. Anyway, but the company confirmed that they are in the preparation stage of it, and that's why this document existed. But they were very clear that the leasing option won't start at those dates. So I'm like, okay, like if they're seeing it as clearly as that, that must be right. Like I said, we can prove them wrong pretty easily if next week they ended up launching the program or they start doing it for a few weeks and whatnot. But it became clear that Tesla is working actively on it at least, so that we can say that for sure. And yeah, I think it's going to be a big deal. I think the leasing program.
So do you think the holdup is that they're still working on the details with the banking, you know, back end stuff, or are they waiting for the demand like to taper off to the point where they actually want to increase demand in the U.S.?
That's a good question. It might be both. I don't know about the back end, but I know about the U.S. It wouldn't necessarily be necessary. But if in the article, I also included an interesting comment from Elon on the last earnings calls. And if I quote, he says, well, we've been reluctant to introduce the leasing on Model 3 because of how it affects our GAAP financials. So it's worth noting that the demand to date is with zero leasing. So obviously, leasing is a way to improve Model 3 demand, but it makes our financial look worse. So that might actually be the bottleneck to releasing the leasing program, where especially in this quarter, where Tesla is going to have a big cash flow problem with the convertible note that they have to pay. It looks like they're going to pay it in cash full, like $900 million or something. So that's going to affect the cash flow significantly. So they might not.
Right, and they're gonna still try to be profitable.
Marginally profitable, yeah.
So maybe the lease starts at March 1st or something. Or
Yeah.
sorry, that would be April 1st.
Yeah. That would make sense. Push the needed cash flow to the next quarter. Focus this quarter on still delivering paid car and finance car instead of lease one, which of course Tesla has to put a lot more money forward and get a residual payment from it. So it's not ideal. But long term, I think it's going to be a great program by Tesla because I believe the Model 3 will retain its value very well, which is going to contribute to either lower prices for the lease or Tesla making bigger margins on the lease. So either way, it's going to be good for Tesla and or for customers. So that means more car on the road. It means more electric mileage on the road. That's a goal.
Yep.
All right. Moving on to, if it can load on my side here, an interesting efficiency test that came out of the company Next Move in Germany. It's an electric car rental company, and they got their hands on a Model X, which is quite easy. It's not that difficult, but more impressively, an early pre-series e-tron, Audi e-tron, and Jaguar I-Pace. Well, Jaguar I-Pace is for sale in Germany, so it's not that difficult. But yeah, having those three cars together is great. And what they did with those three cars, they did an efficiency range test. So what they did is they drove them in parallel on the Autobahn between the Munich airport and Landshut on an 87-kilometer stretch of the highway there at an average speed of 120 kilometers an hour, which is about 75 miles per hour. So all the cars drove in the same environment. So technically, they should have, there's still some variation, but hopefully, it's as close as you can get to a sterile test. That's all the vehicles.
And the temperature, it was also pretty chilly, 8 degrees Celsius, and inside 20 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, so it's not that bad, but yeah, it's at those temperature, I don't really see very much of an effect on range, to be honest. But it's still, yeah, it's a little bit chilly. So all the e-tron, of course, is they only have one powertrain option, 95 kilowatt hour battery pack, two motors, and blah blah blah. Same thing for the I-Pace, but the 90 kilowatt hour battery pack. For the Model X, they use the 90D, which is not for sale anymore, but they felt that the 90D, since the I-Pace is 92, it would make more sense to use it. And the result are well, they are impressive. But I mean, it's what we expected, really. The Model X beat everyone in terms of efficiency with 24.8 kilowatt hour per 100 kilometer. The e-tron came in seconds at 30.5, 23% more. And the I-Pace came in last at 31.3.
And that's
So,
surprising if you just look at the size of the vehicles, because the I-Pace is the smallest of the three,
correct.
and the e-tron is a little bit bigger, and the Model X is the biggest.
Correct. Yeah, like we noted in our reviews of those cars, we wouldn't even, well, e-tron and Model X, maybe you could do some comparison because I can see someone on the market for an SUV, especially an electric SUV, and looking at both Model X and e-tron. The I-Pace, I'm like, I mean, you need to really be able to do some compromise on space and design to in order to want to do it. But when I mean design, I mean an SUV design because it's barely an SUV, really. Looks more like a sedan, and it has also the space more of a sedan. But yeah. In terms of range, based on that consumption, they calculated about 339 kilometers of range on the Model X 90D, 274 for the e-tron, and 272 for the I-Pace. So a big difference for a Model X here, 90D. And so if you're trying to read into those results, I mean, it becomes clear that Tesla has a significant lead in efficiency, especially when you take into account, like you said, the size of the Model X versus those cars. But there are other factors, I think, too.
I mean, one is drag coefficient. Like Audi brought its, kind of huge grill to the e-tron, even though it has, a lot of it's plasticked out. Same with the I-Pace. It still has a huge grill on it, even though it's been kind of designed for airflow. But the Model X is obviously very smooth, and they've kind of gotten rid of most of the grill. And then, also tires, I think, are a big difference. I actually have a very inefficient set of tires on my Model X, and it's a pain because I don't get anywhere near what I, get otherwise. But I know the Audi e-tron and the Jaguar I-Pace have very traditional tires on them, so I don't think they get quite
Yeah, that might be
the
a
rolling
factor.
efficiency.
Yeah.
But I think, to be honest with you, I think the biggest difference is that Tesla's been doing electric vehicles for more than a decade, and this is kind of Audi and Jaguar's first go. And I think all the efficiency stuff that Tesla's been able to learn over the past decade plus, Audi and Jaguar are just kind of starting to figure out right now. I mean, what do you think? Like, what other reasons could this disparity exist? Why other reasons?
I mean, I think everything you just said is true, but I would also take into account that it doesn't necessarily mean that they cannot do it. Like they cannot get some good efficiency out of the car. Is that they're making compromise and compromises, and they know they are. I think the best example, in my opinion, is going to be the Audi. Jaguar has some things that I don't really understand for sure, but Audi, I could give a better explanation, especially the fact that that has become quite clear now that Audi has a big buffer in terms of their battery pack. I estimate that maybe at least, maybe even over 10 kilowatt hour of capacity. Was that me or was it you? I think someone rang the bell.
I don't think
No,
so.
all right.
Wasn't me ringing the bell.
Okay. So about 10 kilowatt hour out of a 95 kilowatt hour battery pack. All we know that is, well, first of all, efficiency sucks, but it's also how they have been able to do some pretty good charging rate, even better than themselves, or they're rating it at 150 kilowatts. But we've seen charging cycles at over 150, around 155 kilowatts, and more impressively than that, they are able to maintain the high charge rate for a long time, well into the highest state of charge of the battery pack. So what that means, why they are able to do that, it's not like a secret chemistry or something, even though I'm sure that chemistry is pretty good, but it's the fact that when you think that you're at 90%, you might not be at 90% of your state of charge because of that buffer. So they are able to maintain that charge rate by sort of deceiving you that your battery pack is getting full, but instead they are keeping that buffer too. I don't think that's the main reason why they have a big buffer to maintain a charge for a longer period of time. I think it's more like a fear for a longevity. So if you don't charge your battery pack at the highest level often, then you can get more charging cycles out of it. You might remember what we reported on Jeff Dunn, Tesla's battery expert, saying that the actual optimal place for longevity is like 70% of the charge rate, even though the difference between like 70 and 80% is very minimal. So for practical reason, you shouldn't stop at 70% and you should go 80, maybe even 90% on a daily basis. But there's definitely advantages there. So I think that Audi has their first, well, it's not their first all-electric vehicle, but their first serious all-electric vehicle, I should say. They want to make sure that the battery doesn't degrade as much for over a long period of time. They have like very serious warranties and stuff, so they want to be on the safe side of that. And I think that's why they do it. But the consequence of that is that you're always carrying around 50% more batteries that you're never going to use, that you don't even have access to. Much like buying a Tesla with a software-like battery pack. And there's some positive for that, but there's also the big negative on the overall efficiency of the car. And I think that's what we're seeing with the e-tron. We might be seeing something similar with the Hi-Pace. It's just that we don't have much evidence of that on other than the low efficiency, because the Hi-Pace doesn't have a great charging capacity and in terms of longevity. But I mean, it has been around for less than a year, so there's not much data on that front. But overall, very interesting test. You can check.
Yeah, this is the first we've seen the three put on kind of even keel.
Yeah, we've seen a bunch of like Bolt versus the Ioniq and things like that, and the Nissan Leaf. But I mean, those cars, they add more disparities in powertrains and battery packs and form factor, you could say, too, in some cases. But these three ones, aside from the Hi-Pace, I'm like, eh, not sure. I like the Hi-Pace. I very like the design and everything. But I mean, in terms of, I don't see someone deciding between an Hi-Pace and a Model X. That's what I'm saying. That it's not like a direct competitor, because you want an SUV, bigger car, you need the cargo space, you're going to go with the Model X. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and ironically, even though it's more like a car, it's more like an AMC Eagle. I don't know if you know those old vehicles, but the wheels are huge, but it's really more of a car than a SUV.
Yeah.
But you know, the I-Pace does really well off road, and I would hesitate to take a Model X, kind of the same places that the I-Pace went when we test drove it. So it's definitely off road capable. It's just not.
Yeah, I think the clearance on the I-Pace is much higher, right? When it's at the top level than the Model X, even if you put it in on high with the suspension. I mean, the Jaguar I-Pace highest suspension thing is called off-road setting. It's not even called high. Like, so,
specifically for going off the road.
Yeah. Next, when I move to Elon's comments on self-driving, which, I mean, we've been doing that for a while now. It's still the same comment. It's still talking about end of the year, but in a new comment that he made on the ARK Invest podcast, ARK Invest is a Tesla investor, and Elon went on their podcast this week, talked to them for about 30 minutes on a bunch of stuff, but it turned out it was mostly about the pilot program and where it's heading. And the difference with this comment in particular, which again said by the end of the year, it was the almost complete certainty of it. Do I have the comment here? I think, I'm quoting, I think we will be feature complete full self-driving this year, meaning the car will be able to find you in the parking lot, pick you up, take you all the way to your destination without any restriction this year. I would say I am certain of that. That is not a question mark. I mean,
so
he started with fantastic. I think, but then he finished with certainty. No question mark.
Right. I mean, we've heard this before, right? We've heard, like, you know, by the end of last year, something was supposed to happen. I think 2 years ago, April, he made a similar statement that within 2 years, you know, full self-driving would be upon us. It would be fantastic, but it just doesn't feel like what we have now in our cars and full self-driving is a few months away. It feels like it's a few years away,
but
I mean, tell me if I'm wrong there.
Yeah, well, you're not. I don't think you're wrong, and I don't think you. Maybe you don't even disagree with Elon Musk here, because what he said after that was also very interesting, and give more context to that, because the full self-driving thing, the way they talk about it, they talk about full self-driving, and I think in most people's mind, when you say full self-driving, the car drive itself, you have nothing to do. You could be asleep. You could be not there. You could be no one in the car.
Right.
But he said after, however, people sometimes would extrapolate that to mean now it works with 100% certainty, requires no observation perfectly. That is not the case. So it does require observation.
Right.
And he said that not requiring any observation would be within another 2 years after that. So the way I understand it right now, what's going to be ready by the end of the year is basically just autopilot plus
the side streets.
The autopilot with the capacity to handle traffic lights, to handle roads that are not highways. Like right now, you can use Autopilot on roads that are not highways, but it's more efficient on highways. And if you technically use Navigate on Autopilot, minus the confirming the lane change, it's basically autonomous on highway, except that you have to be the you have to be ready to take control and you have to touch the steering wheel every time. I think it's going to be the same thing with that, but also able to handle traffic stop and traffic lights. So that's technically fully self-driving, except that Tesla is going to likely keep those autopilot nag, basically. So you're still going to require you to get your hands on the wheel and everything. I'm not sure how that's going to play with the regulators. But when you think about it, it's basically what Waymo's is doing right now, where they have a bunch of cars that drive themselves and everything, but they have an engineer or a test driver in the driver's seat. Tesla is basically doing the same thing, but instead of a test driver that is being paid, they are using paid customer to do the same thing.
And also note that he says this year, meaning that the car will be able to find you in a parking lot, pick you up. So that means theoretically that, you know, you're walking out of the mall and you just click, you know, do something to your app or phone, you know, fob.
Yeah.
And the car, without anybody in it in a public space, backs out of its parking spot and drives to you.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, I don't know if that's going to fly in a year.
You've been talking about that for a long time. That's a smart summon feature, basically. And that was supposed to come months ago. So it looks like they've been working on that a lot. So I'm not that surprised about that. What I'm most surprised about is that he says parking lot. So that's not public roads, but they are public spaces that are privately owned space. So maybe you can do it, but do you need like the permission of the owner of the parking lot or something to do that? I don't know.
I don't know what that means. You know, maybe he's saying like you can walk out your front door and it can come, you know, pick you up.
That's basically what someone does right now. I mean, you can tell it to get out of your garage, for example, by itself and whatnot.
Yeah, but it can't go, you know, like drive around your driveway and come over
to you. If you have a complex driveway, but how many people have that? Normally it's just like pretty straightforward. I mean, those are definitely very interesting comments. And that's what I always come back to. Like, I'm skeptical. I'm obviously skeptical of it. But at the same time, what the fuck do I know? Do I know more than Elon Musk about this? I mean, I don't. I clearly don't. And they have so many great people working on it that we know. And I'm like, it does sound crazy. It does sound like it makes no sense. 90% maybe of people outside of Tesla would say the same thing. I mean, I don't know anyone that doesn't scoff at Elon Musk saying it's going to be ready by the end of the year. Do you?
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, he knows people are getting on him about these insane timelines that he keeps on predicting. And like, so he doesn't, like, theoretically, at least hopefully some of his handlers are helping with this, but he doesn't want to get a reputation of being wrong a lot on timelines, even though he's got a reputation of being wrong on timelines. So, like, theoretically, he would say, oh, you know, maybe I should stop doing this. But I don't know. Yeah. Like, I would love it for it to be true. So,
you know what he says about that, though? He says that the way he knows if the technology is evolving or not is when, not if his prediction on the timeline is right, but if it gets shorter. So it's not about when is 2 years, like 2 years from now. It's about if now it's 1 year instead of 2 years. So,
well, he should say something like, we're targeting this, not it will happen here.
And that's what he was saying before. So that's why this comment is also interesting, is because now it's like he's certain it's going to be ready by the end of the year, basically. But that also means
So what he's doing is challenging his engineers to make it happen. He's like, hey, I put it out there. Make it happen.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like, okay, we'll try. Like, but there's only, you know, there's reality to contend with.
Yeah. Yeah, we see all that reality, things like that. I mean, like I said, I'm skeptical, but I'm sure Elon knows a lot more about this stuff than I do.
Yep.
Speaking of Tesla software updates, Sentry Mode. Sentry Mode Tesla, we talked about last week. They started rolling it out last week, but this week they released a few more interesting details about it in the actual release notes of the latest updates. And they said one of the concerns when we first reported on that is the phantom drain, how much it contributes to the phantom drain when your car is parked, because it's it actively the autopilot, the autopilot cameras are active and they are trying to detect potential threats around the car. Tesla didn't confirm that, like what kind of wattage or how much it drains the battery from it, but they did say in those notes that you cannot enable it if your battery level is below 20%. So clearly that has an effect on it, that it's significant enough to not allow it at certain battery power. So I don't know, with that 20%, like, do they think, because if you activate for a day or something, you could drain 20% of the battery in a day, or I don't know.
Well, even if you drain like 5% or, you know, a half of that, then you're in kind of bad shape.
You might be stuck, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's the idea of it, I suppose. Other thing they said, oh yeah, we talked about the potential last week of a thief actually, like, still knowing that the Sentry Mode is on, breaking into the car, knowing that it's being recorded, but stealing also the USB stick that on which Sentry Mode records the event of the break-in. But Tesla in the note says that they send recorded footage to Tesla for temporary backup and feature improvement. So feature improvements probably like to help the computer vision system to detect the threats better, if someone can confirm was it a threat or not and whatnot. But yeah, and also backup. So maybe if it was actually a break-in and they steal a stick or something, you could maybe call Tesla and they could send you the footage. I don't know. Though Tesla has been weird about that stuff for like accidents. When before the Tesla cam was a thing, we knew that Tesla autopilot camera acted as some kind of black box where they would record the few seconds before a crash.
Yeah, and didn't Jason Hughes?
Jason Hughes has been able to recuperate that stuff when he was buying the cars as a damaged vehicle from salvage. But Tesla itself would never release those images. So presumably they would do it for that. Otherwise, like, why would you back it up? Though they said it's also for future improvement. But,
right.
Yeah, also they say not to leave any sentient beings inside the vehicle if the sentry mode is activated.
Sentient beings.
Yeah.
Like, not aliens. Carbon-based life forms.
Yeah. But apparently you really don't want to be inside the car that the sentry mode is going on, because it's crazy, crazy loud.
Quite loud.
Some people complain about, like, you cannot activate dog mode and sentry mode at the same time, but then, like, why do you leave your dog in the car? That should be enough in itself.
You need a bigger dog.
Yeah, that maybe. But also, if the sentry mode activates, I think your dog would freak out, because those things are loud.
Rare. Did you get sentry mode update yet?
None that I know. By the way, my car is in service right now. Like, none that I use it anyway. Like, I loaned it to a friend of mine, but you got a flat.
Yeah.
On my brand new performance winter tires. And apparently it's not, you cannot repair it. So but it happened in the middle of the night. Tesla picked up the car, brought it to the service center, and now they ordered the tire. Apparently it's 5 to 10 days to get the tire. So my car is stuck at this service center for 5 to 10 days until they get the tire. But I thought at the same time, I might have them install finally the spoiler and my badge that I never got from a Performance Model 3.
Yeah.
And they're not being very communicative with me. You know, they send me like a text every few days saying like, we'll look into it. I mean, you have the spoiler, you don't. But yeah,
right.
That happens. But no, as far as I know, I didn't get this entry mode on it.
Yeah, me neither. I'm excited to try it out, but neither of my Model X or Model 3 has gotten that.
Your Model X is a 2.5 autopilot or a 2.0 autopilot?
It's 2.0, so I probably won't even get it.
Yeah, that's
But I thought he said up to, didn't he say? I thought there was like some follow-up where he
I
said
think he
that.
said August 2017, right? Which is when they introduced 2.5, I think.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Or was it
And
2018?
mine was used, so I don't even know when it was manufactured because it spent
Whoa.
some time being a the showroom car in Boston.
I mean, you can add that from the VIN.
Yeah, I know. I just haven't.
All right, moving on to some interesting comment from a BMW dealer about the Model 3 and Tesla in general. Sonic Automotive, which is one of the biggest dealer group in the US, they have, I think they basically represent every possible brand in the US. But also BMW, they have a lot of BMW dealership, and they reported their last quarter financials. And in that quarter, their BMW sales took a dive. And an analyst on the call asked Jeff Dyke, the president of Sonic Automotive, if he thought that Tesla's Model 3 had any effect on their BMW sale going down. And Dyke responded, there's no question. I mean, they're calling out to sell well over 300,000 cars this year. They sold a lot of cars last year. You can say all you want about their service problem and all of this. They just keep selling more cars. And I don't know if it's more of a cult than it is anything else, but my hat off to them. They're selling lots of cars. And then Dyke even said that, so since he represents a lot of different manufacturers, he's on certain meetings with those automakers, and he said, I can tell you that I've spent a lot of time in manufacturer meeting, and 5 years ago, Tesla was not even a real big topic, and today it's the top of everybody's board, and it needs to be. So apparently there's some inside info that people are making Tesla a top priority, or combating Tesla a top priority, I should say.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's funny because when you talk directly to these auto manufacturers, they're like, "Oh yeah, Tesla, whatever." But you know that is a big concern of theirs.
Yeah, I find that
And that's
some
kind
are
of
pretty open about it though. Some are.
Yeah, some are. And sometimes you'll hear it from, like at an auto show, some BMW exec will say something like, "Yes, Tesla is a concern," or "Yes, Porsche will say, we do model our cars, or we test our cars against the Model X," those kind of things. But like generally speaking, if you talk to any like if you go to a BMW showroom, or if you go to the auto show and you say, "Well, yeah, what about Tesla?" You're like, just it's just like, yeah, we don't really care about that, even though they clearly do.
Yeah, well, we were with Nissan last week, not this week, to test the new Leaf Plus, which we cannot talk about until next week. But they were pretty open about the fact, like, oh, we have a Model 3, we are for like at the headquarters in Nissan, and we everybody test drives it to get their impression of the car and everything. So they pretty open that Tesla is a benchmark for them for sure. And understandably, because like it's the most successful EV right now, so you need to know what's on the market. So it's not like it's a big surprise or anything. But yeah, I mean, I like Dyke's comment, especially like he went after BMW, saying that BMW is not doing enough right now in terms of EVs, which I think is a fair point because we had the i3 since 2013 and nothing yet, nothing since in terms of all electric vehicles. So the Mini Electric is coming this year, but I don't have, even though it's a segment of automobile that I think, I mean, is begging to be electrified. The segment that Mini is selling in, they are skipping the fifth. They are developing right now a new generation of electric powertrain at BMW, but the Mini E will be like the last electric car they do that doesn't have that fifth gen powertrain. So it looks like they. It's not gonna be up to standard, I think, with the rest of the industry. Maybe like it's gonna be like more like a Bolt TV competitor or something, which came out like 3 years ago now. So I'm like, yeah. I don't know. But the fifth gen is coming in the BMW iX3, which is coming next year.
Yeah, it's funny. We talked to BMW at a CES, and it was frustrating for us because, it seemed like they were kind of rolling back their EV ambitions that a few years ago they had, almost all EVs, and this year they only had like one i3, and I don't even know if they had an i8 there. And we talked to their product guy, and we were like, where are the cars? Like, just like put out the cars. And he was like, "They're coming, they're coming." And I'm like, "Dude, you can't, like, your meal's being eaten by somebody else. Like, you need to put cars on lots. You need to put EVs on lots. Not, they're coming in N plus 3 years, like N being whatever it is right now. That the whole auto industry is like, yes, in 2 or 3 years we're gonna have a car, and those years keep getting pushed back, but." It's just happening right now. It's exactly what we thought would happen. Tesla's eating everybody's lunch.
And they're doing it not just in the EV world, they're doing it also in the energy world. Powerwall 2 is the most requested home battery pack, according to not just the most requested, is the majority of customers that want a home battery pack are asking for the Tesla Powerwall. So that's according to Energy Sage. We did a survey of all their solar installer. But the interesting part of the story is that even though 56% of people are coming into SolarStore asking, "Hey, I want a Powerwall," they end up installing a Powerwall only 12% of the time because they cannot get one. That's partly a supply problem, meaning that Tesla is not producing enough of them, and it's also a fact that Tesla is moving away from selling to solar installer and selling directly now. So they are using their own installer and everything. So. Because they also want to push their own solar system at the same time, so it's a whole deal. But it's not 12% is not market share. It's 12% is that even though 56% of people are asking for it, only 12% of getting it. What is great though, it's great for other battery packs. So like it's good for the industry as a whole because they look at like Sonnen, for example, is being requested only 5% of the time, but they're getting 90%, 19% of the installs because. Yeah, people are wanting a Tesla pack, but they're settling for a Sonnen because that particular solar installer doesn't have it. Same thing for LG Chem, which is getting 32% of the install, but 25% of the demand, and a bunch of other two hot back power. Same thing is a higher percentage of installation than they are requests and queries because of Tesla.
Yeah, and I can anecdotally, the people who installed my solar panels, I still talk to them quite a bit, and they can't even get a license to sell Powerwalls, let alone any inventory to get. Of course, everybody's asking for them, and when they ask for them, they say, "We can't get Powerwalls, but we can get Sonnens here in, 4 or 5 days." So, and it's funny that Sonnen is kind of the biggest disparity between asked and received. Because
No.
I feel like, at the moment, they are going around finding installers who sell these things and saying, "Hey, anybody asked for a Tesla, here's something right now, right here," rather than waiting, months for a Powerwall.
Yeah. It's interesting. Another interesting thing is if you're still on the same survey. If you look at solar brands as a whole, so like any type of solar products or related product, the mind shares of those products, so those products are being more requested. Tesla is now second on the list behind LG, which has been, of course, a solar panel manufacturer and now a home battery pack manufacturer for a long time now. And Tesla, within what, 3 years of buying SolarCity, they are now second. In terms of mind share for solar, which is really impressive.
Yeah, and I imagine that some people are saying SolarCity in there, including Tesla.
I'm
That's
pretty
what
sure they
we're.
bundled up together because Tesla is phased out the SolarCity brand for the Tesla brand. But yeah, I mean they're beating companies like SunPower, SolarEdge, Panasonic, Which, I mean, Panasonic is interesting too, because Tesla now using a ton of, we just posted, if you go on the check right now, we just posted an article about their, so the Tesla is using a new Panasonic solar panel. So Panasonic and Tesla are also linked together in there, and Panasonic comes in at 26 versus Tesla's 42, so.
Yeah, it's also interesting. SolarEdge is the inverter maker that Tesla or SolarCity
has
both installs usually by default. Okay. So it's interesting that Tesla has more mind share than them. SunPower is a very efficient solar panel maker. Enphase is another inverter maker. And SMA is an inverter maker. SolarWorld, say, and Canadian Solar are both panel makers. So they kind of group those things together. And I'm surprised LG is actually out in front of Tesla. I don't think a lot of people think of LG as a solar.
Don't you have LG panels on your roof?
I do. I do have LG panels. And you know, I did the research, and they turned out to be the best.
Exactly.
For my situation 3 years ago. Yeah. So.
Yeah. You do research, other people do, so it's probably one that comes up a lot. So that's why they.
Right.
Moving on to Rivian. We like the Rivian truck. Little news that I think it's not that big of a deal, but it was a bigger deal for a lot of people. They filed a patent for what they call a removable auxiliary battery pack. And it's basically, all right. They put a battery pack in the bed of the truck and they connect it to the truck so that it can go longer. I don't know why you would file a patent for that, because it's like, duh, you can put more batteries in the bed of a truck, because it's literally just bolted to the side of the truck, and there's a way to connect it to a connector that links to the powertrain, basically. So,
yeah, I know.
It's like, okay. I mean, I like that they think about it, that it could be an option. I'm sure it's going to be a crazy expensive option, though. But and you lose some bed of the truck, which is already quite small. So I mean, it's a patent about putting batteries in the bed of the truck. All right.
Yeah, I guess you could expand that to a trunk of a car.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's like, because if you're doing that, then you're doing what basically the compliance the automakers making the compliance EVs, where they don't know where to put the batteries, so they like the. They have to remove some interior space and stuff like that. So that's basically what you're saying when you're doing that. Of course, it's an auxiliary battery pack, so it's not the main one. I get it. But yeah, I mean, I like the fact that it's an option, but I think most people are just going to buy it. If you want more battery pack, buy the 180 kilowatt hour version that they can offer. That's going to be enough for most people, and you're going to still get your bed.
And I guess there is that, like, a Better Place company that used to do swappable batteries. I guess this would be a, like, if you were trying to drive cross country, you could get a bunch of these, you know, put them every 200 miles and then just.
I don't know how easy it is to remove them and put them on, though. Like, it looks like a big battery pack that you're adding.
Yeah, it looks pretty heavy. Yeah. I don't know if that's something that a human can do.
Yeah, so I'm not so sure about that. But they are marketing it. That was Jamie made that point in the article, which I think is fair. They are marketing it as an adventure pickup truck. So, of course, if you're going on an adventure, like off-road for a long period of time, like, and you're camping maybe, then maybe it's a product for you. So we'll see. Moving on real quick. China's Kandi announced that they got their approval for the iX3 and K22 EVs in the US. We reported on that last year, where Kandi ended up buying they bought a UTV ATV distributor in the US, and through buying that distributors, they filed for import and sell license for their EVs that are manufactured in China. So they're trying to bring their Chinese EVs to the US. The iX3 is a small SUV crossover, and the K22 is a subcompact electric car, like a small city car, like think of the Smart or something. But they are crazy cheap in China, at least. You're gonna have to assume it's gonna be gonna be more expensive in the U.S., especially since they are likely gonna be hit by a an import tax if the trade war situation remains the same. So we'll see. It might be interesting. There's not a lot of Chinese vehicle available in the U.S. That might be one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if the Chinese vehicles do start coming to the U.S. with the way that the trade war is happening, that it'll be interesting to see what happens to the $7,500 tax credit, because I know we're not going to be giving $7,500 to the Chinese when American companies like Chevy and Tesla can't get those $7,500. I know somebody's going to lose their mind over that.
Somebody's going to lose their mind, but under the current law, though, they would get it. Like, yeah, right. They would get like a 25% import duties, then a $7,500 tax credit. Right. Well, the customer pays either way. Like, they pay it, but
yeah. So the government would be paying the customer, and the customer would be paying, you know, back to the, you know, tariff. So I guess the government would just get their money back.
Yeah, basically
in a circle. Weird.
Yeah. Mercedes-Benz and the EQC SUV. So there's a report coming out of Germany. Mercedes hasn't commented on it yet, that says that the EQC has been delayed a few months. The first delivery would start in June, but only to, I'm quoting, VIP customers. Any meaningful volume wouldn't start until November, according to the report, which again is just, it's a Handelsblatt, which is a has a good reputation in Germany for inside sources and everything, but not 100% confirmed yet. So that's a kind of disappointing, but and it's also interesting that just a few, I think it was last week that we reported that the CEO of Daimler said like the AQC is sold out for the first year. But
right.
If they only deliver it in volume for 2 months, it's not that impressive. And I mean, I was always suspicious of the timing of the EQC since the unveiling of it, because like they clearly rushed to unveil it before the e-tron. Like the e-tron was planned, the unveiling for months and everything, and then like 2 weeks before the EQC, so we're unveiling. Mercedes-Benz says we are unveiling the EQC, which is of course going to be a big competitor to the e-tron, and they did that. They unveiled it before the e-tron, even though it was supposed to hit the market a year after the e-tron. Now, though, the e-tron was also delayed. So to be fair, now they're like basically going to be pretty close, because at least in the U.S. Though I don't know if June and November, that's probably just Europe, but so it could be even later in the U.S. But they're both delayed, or seemingly so. I mean, the e-tron was supposed to be here last year, so it's been delayed a lot too. They are coming.
Yeah, we get lots of reports of the e-tron and the I-Pace being delayed months at a time for customer deliveries.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, I-Pace, they're delivering them, but just like very slowly like right now. I think last month was like 1,000 units or something globally, which is not great. Finally, a worrying report from Germany again about VW wanting to have their own gigafactory for battery cells. It's something they've been talking about for a while. I mean, Herbert Diess, the CEO of Volkswagen, said at one point last year, reported, we must not make ourselves dependent on a few Asian manufacturers in the long term, speaking of Asian battery cell manufacturer. And that's after they issued like $48 billion in battery cell contracts, an enormous amount of battery cell contracts. But they're still seeing long-term that they would need their own battery cell production, a lot like Tesla did with the Gigafactory 1 and Panasonic. So Manager magazine, a few months back, they reported that they were working on a plan with SK Innovation, a Korean manufacturer of battery cells, to do their own battery factory with them, a lot like the partnership that Tesla has with Panasonic. But now they're reporting, the same magazine, excuse me, they're reporting that the talks are dead, and that LG Chem probably killed the talks. And LG Chem is one of the big partner right now for battery cell with VW, a big supplier to them. They are running some kind of supply task force to make sure that they have the battery cell ready for the ID vehicle that are being launching on the MEV platform in the next few years, starting this year. So in the short term, they very much need LG. And apparently, according to a manager report, LG was like, if you want to do that deal with SK Innovation, we're not going to supply you battery cell. And of course, they need those batteries, and they sort of Let the LG have that one.
So to me, this is another like obvious Tesla thought is 5 years ahead with the Gigafactory, and these other car companies are just learning now that they can't just say, all right, let's just buy them on the open market because all of these batteries are accounted for. And if they want to, if they, like get lucky and they sell a ton of cars, they can't expect any batteries to be on the market. And, they're kind of at the whims of the market. The, if battery are constrained, the prices are going to go way up, and all of a sudden their car's not, reasonably priced anymore. So this is one of those things where you can see Tesla being in the game so much longer. They saw the way the winds were blowing, and they were like, look, we have to be in control of our own battery supply. This is a big, important part of the puzzle. We're going to build a factory. And like, it's playing out exactly how you would imagine. Now Tesla kind of controls its factory. It can, it can't control costs 100%, but it can control a lot of the cost, and they're not at the mercy of the, LG, Samsung, Sony, SK Innovation, and the other battery manufacturers. So again, Tesla being 5 years out in front has its advantages.
Yeah, and I think they should like announce a new one soon too to get the ball rolling because they know like the kind of volume they're gonna need. But I think they're still trying to figure out the exact model of the Gigafactory one first before replicating it to other factories. But yeah, a lot of exciting from that front, and hopefully Volkswagen figured it out too. And I mean, again, it's still a report. It might be more complicated than that. I mean, I don't want to throw LG camp under the bus here, but based on that report, they don't look good in my opinion. All right, that's pretty much it for us this week, everyone. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. Thanks a lot to our sponsor, Dandelion. And what's
Dandelionenergy.com/electric.
Yeah, if you want to check them out, and if you're in New York, you could save a few thousand bucks a year, which is nice. All right, have a good one, guys. Ciao.